First, think about some of the big questions in recent years in American politics when it comes to the nature of citizenship. What makes someone a citizen of the United States? Who gets to vote and what restrictions can states put on voting? What laws apply to citizens only? What laws apply to non-citizens on American territory? Our next guest says those current issues were shaped not just by the Constitution or the Bill of Rights, but by the aftermath of the U.S. Civil War and the three post-war constitutional amendments. And those amendments, the 13th, 14th, and 15th, were so fundamental that he says they amount to a second founding of the United States. Eric Foner is the DeWitt Clinton Professor Emeritus of History at Columbia University. His books include Reconstruction, America's Unfinished Revolution, and Battles for Freedom, the Use and Abuse of American History. His latest book is The Second Founding, How the Civil War and Reconstruction Remade the Constitution. Eric, welcome back to the show.
Very nice to be here.
We talk a lot about the founding documents, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. Do we pay enough attention in general to these three post-Civil War amendments?
No, I'm afraid we don't. I mean, as you mentioned, I see them as not just small changes in an existing constitution, but as really fundamentally changing the nature of our constitution and really creating the constitution we live under today. The 13th Amendment abolished slavery, which had been protected in the original Constitution. The 14th, as you said, defined for the first time who was a citizen of the United States, anyone born in the United States, regardless of race, religion, national origin, anything like that. And the 15th extended the right to vote to black men, which was a radical change in our political system. Before the Civil War, only a handful of free African Americans, mostly in New England, had the right to vote. So these amendments really changed the nature of the relationship between individual Americans and the federal government and made the federal government responsible for protecting these rights that were being written into the Constitution.
Take us back to the late days of the Civil War and shortly thereafter. It's clear that the Constitution was ripe for change. A lot of people thought. You write that at one point somebody said there were about 70 different amendments floating around. People were looking to do something here.
Yeah, I mean, look, the original Constitution did not envision a civil war. It didn't say anything about what would happen if a number of states waged war against the nation. So the abolition of slavery required more fundamental changes, because what was going to be the status of these 4 million African Americans now freed from slavery? Were they going to be citizens or not? Were they going to have the same rights as white Americans or not? In other words, the Civil War itself puts these questions on the national agenda that the three constitutional amendments are trying to address and solve.
And another question that gets raised, another fundamental question, is what is a citizen? And it sounds like, as you write, we kind of had a really vague notion of what it meant to be a citizen before the Civil War.
Yeah, before the Civil War, basically the problem was the states defined who was a citizen. You could be a citizen in one state and not a citizen in another. For example, Massachusetts recognized African Americans as citizens, but the southern states didn't. So you needed a definition. A new nation had emerged from the Civil War, a much more unified nation. You needed a definition of who was going to be a citizen of the United States. And, you know, the Dred Scott decision before the Civil War had said no black person can be a citizen. Dred Scott just said, no, citizenship is just white people. Blacks have no rights within the United States. But the end of slavery forced onto the agenda this question of, well, what about blacks? And, of course, as I said, the 14th Amendment says anybody born here. It abrogates the Dred Scott decision and says any person born in this country, regardless of their race, is a citizen and also has to have equal rights before the law. The 14th Amendment puts this notion of equality into the Constitution for the first time. There was nothing in the original Constitution saying that, well, all Americans have to have equal rights. They didn't, by any means. But now that fundamental principle, which we take for granted today, is put into the U.S. Constitution.
Talking to historian Eric Foner about his new book, The Second Founding, How the Civil War and Reconstruction Remade the Constitution. As fascinating as what did happen in this era is what didn't happen. And one of those things, Eric, is giving women the right to vote. There was a big movement to try to make that happen, what, 50, 60 years earlier than it actually did?
Yeah, 50 years earlier. Yes, equality, the thrust for equality hit a wall when it came to women. And even some of the most radical Republicans in Congress who were dedicated to promoting the rights of African Americans could not quite get their minds around the idea that women also ought to have these same equal rights, and particularly, of course, the right to vote. There was a pretty dynamic women's movement, which involved both black and white women. During the Civil War, they had sort of put aside the question of women's suffrage to fight for the abolition of slavery. But now that the war was over and the, as Elizabeth Cady Stanton said, the constitutional door is open, they demanded to be included also. And she said very presciently, if this door is closed without us, it will take 50 years. To get us back into the Constitution. And that's exactly what it took from 1870 to 1920.
One key feature of all three of these amendments you laid out that really, you say, changed the balance of power between the federal government and states, or could have anyway, each of them has a line along the lines of the Congress shall have the power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation, saying, hey, we've passed these laws and made these changes, and we're giving ourselves the right to enforce this, it sounds like, within states as well.
Absolutely, definitely within states. This is a fundamental change. First of all, those provisions in each of the amendments guarantee that this will be an ongoing process. It's not just you pass the amendment and that's it. Congress will be able to decide over and over again how these rights can be most effectively enforced. You know, the Bill of Rights starts with the words, Congress shall make no law. The Bill of Rights restricts the powers of the federal government. It gives us our civil liberties, the first 10 amendments we're talking about, you know, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, trial by jury. All those are guaranteed against violation by the federal government, not the states. Now, with these three amendments, the states are going to be overseen by the federal government to make sure that they guarantee or respect the basic equal rights of all Americans. So this is a fundamental change. The federal government changes from being seen as a threat to people's liberties to being what Charles Sumner, the great senator from Massachusetts, called the custodian of freedom. The federal government is now empowered, and much of the power of the states to define citizens' rights is taken away.
Historian Eric Foner is with us. We're talking about his new book, The Second Founding, How the Civil War and Reconstruction Remade the Constitution. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question for our guest about these post-Civil War amendments and how they changed the country? Do you feel like we pay enough attention to this era just after the Civil War in what we're taught in school, what we talk about on the political stage? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Historian Eric Foner is with us talking about his new book, The Second Founding, How the Civil War and Reconstruction Remade the Constitution. He says the three amendments ratified after the Civil War reinvented the United States and have powerful echoes in today's political landscape. You can join the conversation with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. Eric, before we bring on a caller or two, you write that after all these amendments are ratified, there's a backsliding. Congress, the White House, and especially the courts don't necessarily pursue these amendments and their empowering legislation.
Yes, sad to say, this story is both one of greatly expanded rights in the immediate aftermath of the Civil War, but then a long retreat. You know, one of the lessons, which is certainly relevant today, is rights can be gained and rights can be taken away, particularly when you have a conservative Supreme Court, as they did after the Civil War and into the early 20th century. Little by little, the court just whittled away at these amendments, making them less and less effective, and really allowing, after Reconstruction was over, allowing the southern states to to basically abrogate many of these provisions. Equality before the law, that was certainly taken away from blacks in the South. The right to vote in the Constitution for black men, abrogated in the South around 1900 by the southern states. Supreme Court just acquiesced in this retreat, which meant that it took another, 50, 60 years into the era of the Civil Rights Revolution for these amendments to be reinvigorated.
I want to go to a caller now. Jeff is with us in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Yes, thank you. I'm concerned about, for example, the issue of marriage. Some states allow gay marriage, some states don't, so it may go before the Supreme Court. What is the difference in the Constitution, then, between inalienable rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, and civil rights or civil liberties?
Well, first of all, you were right up to a couple of years ago. I mean, remember, the Supreme Court has now, in a famous case, Obergefell, said that states cannot deny gay men or gay women, any gay people, the right to marry. So that's no longer in the hands of the states. Gay marriage is now legal in every single state. And that's a 14th Amendment decision. That's exactly what I'm talking about. That decision is based on equal protection of the law. The states cannot say this group of people has one set of rights, but that group of people doesn't have that right. You know, it shows you how the 14th Amendment particularly has been used actually to expand the rights of all sorts of groups. People in 1866, when the amendment was passed, weren't thinking about gay marriage. That wasn't exactly a political issue in the 19th century. But they were thinking about equality among Americans. And that principle can be extended to gay people, to everybody else. So it shows you how important, particularly the 14th Amendment, has been in defining the rights of Americans.
Thanks a lot for that call, Jeff. Let's stay in the present day a little bit and the right to vote. How have debates over things like voter ID laws, things like that, related back to these post-Civil War amendments? I guess the 15th in this case.
Well, the 15th Amendment is the one that deals with the right to vote, but it's couched in a negative way. It says states cannot deny to anyone the right to vote because of race. But it leaves open all sorts of other requirements that states can put in. And in the late 19th century, when states took away the right to vote from black men, they didn't just say, hey, blacks can't vote. They said they put in literacy tests. They put in what they called understanding clauses. You had to prove to a registrar you understood the state constitution, grandfather clauses. They didn't mention race specifically, but it was very clear, they were totally explicit about it, that they were, the purpose of these things was to eliminate the black vote. Now, today you have a similar thing. There are many states, Wisconsin is one of them, if I'm not mistaken, that has tightened up the right to vote and excluded a fairly significant number of people from voting, whether it's an ID law or they haven't voted in two elections or whatever the reason is. And some state courts have said, look, these laws are meant to stop minorities from voting. They don't say that, but like the states close down voter registration places in minority areas, or they demand a voter ID, but then they don't open the motor vehicle bureaus where there's a lot of black people living so that they can't get this ID. So, in other words, the right to vote is still contested. That's an astonishing thing, 150 years after the Civil War, and there is no uniformity between the states. Some states are very open about the right to vote. Some have been suppressing the right to vote for thousands, if not tens of thousands of people in the last 5 to 10 years or so. Even though we consider ourselves a democracy, the right to vote has always been contested, and there's always been people who think too many people are voting, and we have to try to get rid of some of them.
Let's bring on another caller now. Scott is with us in Green Bay. Scott, hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, the guest mentioned that the 14th Amendment has all these ramifications for today, and I wanted to talk about the 14th Amendment and the legal entity that is the corporation.
That's a great question.
Yeah, go ahead, Eric.
No, the thing is that, in the 1880s, the 14th Amendment, among other things, says that the states cannot deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without the due process of law. Person. In the 1880s, the court said, well, you know, corporations are people too, or at least in legal terms, they have personhood, and therefore states can't regulate them. States can't, like this had to do with railroads. Can a state set the railroad rates, or can it set the number of hours that people are allowed to work in a factory or a mine? And over the years, the courts whittled away, as I said, about these protections for blacks, but they added more and more protections for corporations as persons under the 14th Amendment. The culmination of that recently, of course, was Citizens United, which said that decision by the Supreme Court, which said, well, corporations are persons. They got the same right of free speech as actual persons, you know, real flesh and blood ones. And, you know, you can't regulate how much money these corporations spend on elections and campaigns and things like that. You know, to my mind, this is utterly ridiculous. That wasn't what the people who wrote the 14th Amendment or voted on it were trying to accomplish at all. You know, this is, as is often said, the Constitution is what the Supreme Court says it is. And we now have a Supreme Court which seems to be much more interested in the rights of corporations than in many of the actual rights of individual American citizens.
Scott, thanks for that call. Eric, in our last few moments, it also sounds like a constitutional amendment is what you make of it in terms of people protesting in the civil rights movement, people taking things to courts.
Well, absolutely. That's the thing that's wonderful about these amendments. They are written, particularly the 14th, in general language. Due process, equal protection, privileges and immunities of citizens. They don't specify exactly what those are, so they leave it open to future contests, future struggle. People claiming greater rights can now go to the Constitution ever since these amendments and find a constitutional basis for the equality that they feel they're being denied. So, yes, the Constitution is what we make of it, and there's always going to be conflicts and struggles, but at least the three amendments have opened the door to people using the Constitution to expand their rights as citizens, which is, I think, a wonderful feature of our democracy.
Eric, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Nice to talk to you.
That was Eric. Bye-bye. That was Eric Foner, DeWitt Clinton Professor Emeritus of History at Columbia University. His books include Reconstruction, America's Unfinished Revolution, and Battles for Freedom, the Use and Abuse of American History. We've been talking about his newest book. It's called The Second Founding, How Civil War and Reconstruction Remade the Constitution.